Today, we begin for the first time in the history of our church, as far as I'm aware, a series of talks on parenting. It's interesting for a church as established as our church is for over decades now, right? You would wonder, how could it be possible that there's never been a sermon series on something as foundational to communities, to a church community, as parenting? For some of you, I'm sure, in fact, I had a couple of you already say to me this morning, this is just what I need when I need to hear it. I'm so thankful that you're doing this. And I get that. Our children's ministry, especially our nursery, is literally bursting upstairs at the seams. If you walk around, there appear to be pregnant people everywhere here. Consider that a warning about drinking the water at Menham Hills Community Church. But I think there's a reality for why you don't hear a lot of parenting series. Lots of reasons that churches tend to avoid the topic. First of all, if it's not addressed correctly, I believe the topic is, let's be honest, it's rather narrow in its focus, so its audience appeal is not all that great. Our church, by church standards, is a very young church. We are full of young families, but lots of churches aren't, and you know that. And so it's something that lots of pastors don't really see as a need of the congregation. And yet, even in our church right now, there are lots of folks who hear about a parenting series, and they go, well, I don't have young kids, this isn't applicable to me, so I'll sleep in for the next 4 or 5 weeks. Hear me on this. My goal, the way I'm trying the best I can to fashion this series, is for the lessons in the series that we'll draw from Scripture should apply to everyone. In regards to parenting, right? Singles can get an early start on considering how they want to parent, who they want to parent with. Couples without kids can benefit from having a plan before the kids enter the picture and all of the, quote, extra time suddenly disappears, and trust me, it will. Even empty nesters and grandparents can consider, what kind of legacy do I want to leave for my family? These people have time on their hands, the empty nesters like me, and so we can fill it by being positive influences for those that we care the most about. I can tell you from experience, parenting never ends. I was at a birthday party for a friend yesterday, and I got four calls from two of my kids that I had to leave to go talk to about some stuff going on. It changes. It never ends. And grandparenting is just a new beginning. And finally, for those without any kids or grandkids and none on the way, please hear me on this. I really understand that this is a topic that is sensitive. This is also why churches avoid it. I know there's pain maybe involved here, and so please know that I see you. I know many of you. Your faces are in my mind as I write these talks. Your stories, right, about not being the parent or the grandparent you long to be are close to my heart. So please know I'll try to be as sensitive as possible to that story and that pain over the coming weeks. And yet, here is the deal, parent, grandparent or not, all of us, every single one of us, either have parental-like influence in the lives of others or the potential for that influence in the life of others. Influence, I mean life-changing, perception-altering influence in the lives of others. Most of us have it, and if we don't have it, we could get ourselves involved in things where we would have it. And that's what's at the heart of this series. I'm calling it Parent Trap because each week we're going to deal with traps that parents fall into. Somebody said to me, are you naming it after the movie? And I said, what movie? And they said, we should probably watch that before you get started. But I haven't watched it yet, so we'll see. As parents fall into commonly set and repeated traps, right? And those traps are detrimental to and sometimes permanently impactful to our influence on our children or on others. Nowhere is it more important, these traps and figuring out ways to avoid them, than in the parent-child relationship. But everywhere is the potential for the problem. So there are lots of reasons to not do a sermon series like this. Can I give you one last one that's a little personal? When a pastor does a parenting series, it shines a spotlight on two people groups. The first is the pastor and his wife. And the second is the pastor's kids. It is inevitable, right? When anybody, including me, gets up to talk about parenting, you're going to judge Joan and I. And I get that. I'm a big boy. I understand that comes, you know, with the pulpit. It comes with the microphone and with the stage, right? In some form or some fashion, as the pastor, you're judged every week. But when it comes to parenting of my kids, well, you can imagine it gets real personal real fast. And of course, it's human nature when the pastor gets up to talk about parenting. I mean, let's be honest, all eyeballs tend to look towards his kids. Let's see if this guy really knows what he's talking about. Let's evaluate whether or not this is worth listening to based on how his kids turned out. And so because I love my kids, I have avoided doing something like this until they turned out. My youngest is, well, she's not all turned out, but she's 22. She's getting there. The frontal lobe is almost complete. All of them are more than adults in whom Joan and I are very proud and ridiculously pleased. And so check them out if you want, and you will find that they are absolutely perfect. I have no idea what you're laughing at. Not one discernible flaw. Obviously, that is, I can see the eyeball starting to focus on my son-in-law now. He's not perfect. I just said, he may be more perfect than my kids. My kids aren't perfect. They weren't born perfect, and neither were yours. And here's something I am sure of. They are not perfect because they were raised by imperfect parents. Joan and I are not parenting experts. Now, you need to understand, we used to be parenting experts. We once knew everything there was to know about parenting, everything there was to raise kids perfectly. We would have told you all about it. We were parenting experts. You know what happened? We had kids. And you quickly realize, holy smokes. And so again, lots of reasons not to do the series. The audience, my kids, my screw-ups. And I'll give you one more. We don't live in a spiritually neutral world. And so when somebody stands up to say, this is the way that you should parent your kids or consider parenting your kids, when you kind of press into the darkness of the world in which all of us are now trying to raise our kids, the darkness presses back. And so from a spiritual perspective, a heavenly's perspective, and wanting to protect my family from unfair evaluation and from, you know, spiritual attack, it would be easier for me to just take a pass. But it wouldn't be responsible. It's, in my mind, it's time. My kids have turned out. You are free to evaluate them if you like. I wish you wouldn't, but I get it. They're not perfect. To me, they are. But they're not perfect, just like their mom and dad. My kids have and do struggle. And trust me on this, I know you don't see it, but they have and do struggle with all of the same things that your kids do. The world has not left them alone because their dad is the pastor, trust me. And actually, I would argue maybe anything but. But, and I claim almost no credit for this, despite who their dad is, by God's grace and to his glory, each of them is a follower of Jesus. In one capacity or another, they are actively pursuing and serving Jesus. And by the way, and we'll deal with this in this series, if one of them wasn't actively in pursuing Jesus, it wouldn't mean that I'm a bad parent. You get that? It's also time because the world in which many of us are raising our kids and our grandkids has become, and I know every generation says this, right? But so ridiculously difficult and toxic. I'm not going to rehash all the statistics. We know them, right? The depression, the isolation, the suicide rates, the anxiety, the collapse of what were once shared traditional values, the terrors of technology, the coarseness of our culture. I'm telling you from personal experience, it's like Joan and I raised two different sets of generations, kids in two different generations. Our first were born in 92 and 94, pre-internet, pre-social media, and that seems truly to, I mean, you know, those were the good old days. I just have to tell you, it was so much easier. It was like a different world. It was a different world. Our next two were born in 97 and 2002, and the whole world changed. The challenges just became incrementally, they quadrupled, and they haven't stopped growing. Yet, can I share this with you? Despite the bleakness of the news, one thing remains exactly the same. Study after study, go home and look it up, because I have. Every study you can find concludes the same thing. No matter how crazy the culture has gotten, no matter how things have changed, nobody and nothing has more impact on your children than you do. Nobody. And here's both the good news and the bad news. It's not even close. It's not even close. And so with all of that as way of warning, this is the longest introduction to a sermon series I've ever given. Despite all of the danger, and because of all of the danger, giddy up. In this series, I'm going to share with you what Joan and I have learned about parenting. We have been parented. Three of our four parents are still alive and with us. We have been parented together for, well, let's put it this way, well over 100 years. We have parented four children over a combined 112 years, just our four kids. Here they are in a picture. This was when Caroline, our youngest, was just born. I wanted to get you a picture of the four of them. This picture was actually taken by Annie Herman, our lead worship singer, at the picture place in the Rockaway Mall, probably in 2002. So we have now parented for a long time, and I am now the grandparent of little Andrew, who is 2 years old. Some of you heard the news about Courtney and Ryan. They called us to their house a few weeks ago to tell us that we were now going to be the grandparent of two, because Courtney was pregnant. And we were ridiculously excited about this news. Then we had a gender reveal party. And the wonderful news is that now I'm going to have a little grandson. And they were the perfect, like, it was just the perfect little family, little girl, little boy. And then Courtney, you know, went to her second sonogram appointment. Didn't even take Ryan. I mean, it was the second appointment. And the woman said, "Oh, this is interesting. It says that you're here for a single baby." And Courtney goes, "I am here for a single baby." And the woman, as she's doing the sonogram, goes, "Nobody told you you're having twins?" And she goes, "I'm not having twins. We already did this. I've already had the blood work, everything. I'm just having one boy." And she flips around the screen. She goes, "I'm not sure." She goes, "I know this has never happened here, but you're having twins." So now it turns out Fridays with Pop Pop are going to be even more fun than we ever imagined. So now I'm working on being a grandparent of three. I am not just going to drag you through all of our experiences, although I will tell you it will be a personal series, because many of you, you know, you're interested. Like, I get calls from folks saying, "Hey, could you help me? What would you do if this was your situation?" So I want to share personal stories, but I also want to lean into our faith. I'm going to be leaning into the teachings of Jesus, the wisdom of the scriptures and its stories and its truths, because the times have changed, but God's truth and principles and wisdom have not. So let's jump in. Our parenting journey started on the way, well, it started the way many of yours did, with little to no preparation. October 6, 1992. Those glasses were in style. I want you to know that. I know you might not believe that right now, but there was once a time. That was shortly after Courtney was born. It was a pretty tumultuous delivery. One minute they were telling Joan she was fine and it was way too early to get an epidural, that she needed to stop being a baby. And then 5 minutes later, as she writhed in agony on the table, they checked again and said, "Oops," I can remember this word for word, "Oops, sorry, honey, it's way too late for an epidural. Quick, someone get the doctor, the baby is coming." And so Joan delivered Courtney Elizabeth Eisman, I believe 6 pounds, 7 ounces. I'll have to ask Joan when she's here in the next service. And it was rough, man. It was rough. I remember when it was over, I looked at Joan and said, I don't think I can go through this again. That's a true story, too. By October 8th, about, 36 hours later, they were telling me to go down and bring the car around because it was time for us to go. And it's just the weirdest feeling if you've gone through this, right? For like a day and a half, they're telling you everything there is to keep this little baby that's completely dependent on you. Here's all the things you need to do to ensure that this baby is going to stay alive, minute by minute, step by step. And then a couple hours later, they're like, all right, you're good to go. Enjoy the next two decades. And you just walk down the hall. I remember walking down the hall, and they're like waving goodbye, and I'm like, goodbye? I wouldn't even... I'd argue there's no moment in your life for which you feel less prepared than when you walk out with that first child. You're like, what am I, I don't even know how to get them out of the car, right? But I remember I got down, they said, we'll wheel Mrs. Eisman down and go get your car. I went around and got our 1988 red Toyota Corolla and I brought it around to the hospital door. WABC talk radio was on. Rush Limbaugh was on. He was railing about something in regards to, this is a true story too, he was railing about something in regards to condom distribution in public schools. And I had this visceral reaction, like quickly to jump and turn off the radio, right? Because I'm like, I can't have my little girl hear this on our first, moment in life. I might not have known what I was doing as a dad, but I knew it wasn't going to be, that wasn't going to be Courtney's first lecture. We strapped her in, off we sailed, and by God's grace again, we're still sailing. We hit some sandbars along the way, but we're still sailing. And I think while all of us in that moment, those first moments feel unprepared, Joan and I brought, by God's grace, okay? I claim no credit for this. God's grace, he brought us to that moment with years of preparation, which I know sounds weird. But it was our story. I became a follower of Jesus in college in the late 80s. And it really did begin to impact the way I saw things, who I was as a man, and who I was going to be as a husband. And Joan and I were engaged in 1989. We were married in 1990, and we wanted to be parents. And following Jesus impacted the way I thought about what that role as a dad would be. Once we were engaged, twice actually, 1 year when we were engaged and in the first year of our marriage, we went away to what's called, I believe it still exists, it's called the Family Life Conference Weekend to Remember. Anybody been to that? A couple of you. And so Joan went, we went to the Family Life Conference before we were a family. And then we went again the first year we were married. Speaking about focusing on our family, in the 80s and 90s, there was no bigger Christian influence than that ministry, Focus on the Family, led by James Dobson. This is no exaggeration. Joan and I listened to it every day. If Dobson wrote about marriage and parenting, I read it. I remember being on the train, engaged to my wife, and I was reading Dobson's What Every Wife Wishes Their Husband Knew About Women, and people giving me weird looks on the train to Newark. I read it before I was married. Again, I didn't plan any of it. It was just God's grace. It was what he was doing. And so when Courtney showed up, we actually had a lot of ideas. We weren't blank slates, but neither were any of you if you had kids in your future. And it's because you had been parented, right? Without a predetermined and oft-reflected on mindset, you, as a parent, will default, sometimes even if you're fighting it, you will default to the way you were parented. I remember in the Family Life Conference, the guy gave a saying, I'll never forget it. He said, every family is like a chain link fence, and the links are all going in a specific direction. And unless somebody, some generational leader, decides that the links of that fence are going to change and go in a new direction, they will continue on in the same direction forever. And I came from a great family, and I remember sitting in that room thinking, this link is going in a different direction. This link is going to go in a direction that is going to follow and honor Christ at new levels. I remember sitting there and thinking about it. We came from good families, Joan and I, and so we knew the things that we liked, and we knew traps we wanted to avoid. And as young Christians who grew up in, me as a young Christian who grew up in a relatively unchurched home, I had a desire to watch and learn from other serious followers of Jesus how they were raising their kids. And so Joan and I began to watch them. It was a family here, the Bylsmas. I remember, almost none of you would remember them. I remember going to their house. They lived over in Chester. My friend Gary and his wife Jan, I watched how they parented their children. I watched how they parented a prodigal child. I'll tell you another couple we watched that are here this morning, Connie and Ed Baker. Joan and I just watched what Connie and Ed did with their daughters. Watched it. I've been watching it. Now I watch what they do with their grandchildren. I've been watching them for decades. Joan had a sister and brother-in-law who had young children already, and I couldn't, but the way my brother-in-law related to his children, I'd never seen fathering like that. I remember watching that and thinking, I want to be like that. And so unbeknownst to me, in all of this, again, by God's grace, it wasn't some overarching plan that I had. It was just how God was leading us at the time. When Courtney came along, because we had done all these things, we didn't know it, right? We actually, Joan and I have been talking about this week, and I've been saying, you know, let's go over how this happened. We actually had in place the number one thing in parenting. We didn't know it at the time, but we did. Actually, I would say it's the number one thing in any relationship of influence. At this point, parents, grandparents, people of influence cannot be overstressed enough. It is foundational to the whole rest of this series. If you miss this point, you will never be able to frame the rest of the series. You're going to hear it over and over again. Parents, grandparents, influencers, it is never, ever too late to take this point number one and put it into practice. Here it is. You have to parent with a purpose. You have to parent with a purpose. You have to parent towards a place, towards a destination, with a goal in mind, which I know sounds somewhat trite, but I will tell you, I was going to do this series for a while. I've been reading parenting books like crazy, trying to reframe my own parenting so I understood what I did and how it fits into. And it's just the key. It seems easy, but let's be honest. Like, we had four young children. We had sports and schools and church and work. And most of the time, and time is of the essence in parenting. When it comes to parenting, right, time is short. Most of the time, our parenting goal is survival, right? Like, just literally trying to survive, trying to keep them alive. There were seasons of parenting, and look, when it's at its peak, isn't your life almost like the guy, the prisoner in the cell, just kind of crossing off the days till parole? Like, I can't possibly do this for 16 more years, right? There's no way. Parenting with a purpose, like you lose the purpose because your days just fill up. Parenting with a purpose, right? I'm just trying to keep us from killing each other. So many days, I get it, there is no grand plan or overarching purpose. But the truth is that almost all of us have a destination for our children in mind. I know you do right now. Almost everyone in the room does, right? If you asked anyone in the room, right, I'll show you. Let's say it together. If I asked you what you want for your kids, I would say, hey, tell me what you want for your kids. You would say, I just want my kids to be. Say it like you really mean it. I just want my kids to be. It's what everybody wants, right? Just want my kids to be happy, dude. Which sounds like great. I mean, I want my kids to be happy too. But how do you parent towards happy? Like, what's the recipe there? Like, I want my kids to be happy, so here's what I'm going to do. Plus, if the goal is happiness, right? Think of the impact the mistakes that you can make as a parent with your parenting styles. How do you have happy kids when you have to discipline? What about values? How do values and happiness mix? Because if happiness is the goal, where's character? Well, that too. And look, we all know this, right, as adults. Happiness is so fleeting and so circumstantial. And though we try, right, we can't control our kids' circumstances. We really try, but we can't. And I would argue happiness is actually not an end, in itself at least. Happiness is a byproduct of a different destination. Now, there are lots of other planned parental purposes. Many of us would say, speaking of character, I just want my kids to grow up to be good people. I want my kids to grow up to be good people too. For sure, right? We need to be more concerned about who our children are than what they do, although most of the time we wind up parenting towards what they're going to do. Character, if we get it right, will impact what they do. So this is, in my mind, a better purpose. It's a more worthy destination. But again, what if character weren't the end game? What if values were not the end game, but a byproduct of a better destination, that which had with it happiness and joy and character? And finally, here's where we all have to be honest with ourselves. Lots of us have lots of destinations in mind for our kids, which we might never say out loud. We might not even be honest with ourselves about them. But many of the destinations, you know, I know you would never do this, but have you gone to a 10-year-old sporting event? I mean, there's a lot of people there whose, the parental destination is professional athlete, right? That's what my kid's going to be. I'd never say it, but I parent like it. Ivy Leaguer, first seat in the band. The destination is to make them everything that we weren't or everything that we wanted to be. The destination oftentimes for us parents is to make us proud, to fill our cups up, to bloat our egos, to have people evaluate us through the success of our kids, to be the dad of the star athlete or the mom of the prom queen. I mean, if your kids have ever thrown a fit in a restaurant and you've had that uneasy feeling where you're like, I mean, let's be honest, when your kids throw a fit in a restaurant, who are you more concerned about? Right? Parenting your kids correctly or how people are evaluating you as a parent? This is really deep in us. We all fall into that trap. It's unspoken, it's unreflected upon, but we spend lots and lots of our parental energy and lots of time, which adds up to years, on all of those various destinations. And you may never say them, but your kids feel them. And here's the truth. Most of our kids never arrive at those places, but they bear the burden their entire lives of unmet expectation. I want you to know, Joan and I are not above any of these destinations. They are all part of our story. They have all crept in from time to time. But because of all the work, and again, by God's grace, right, all the evaluating and watching of these families that we did in the early years, on October 8th, 1992, when Joan and I left the hospital, I actually had a destination in mind. I didn't know it. But because of all the work and preparation, I had a destination in mind. And so this week, I've been reflecting on what it was. And Joan and I parented with two very, very overarching, specific places we wanted our kids to end up. And we believed that they got there. All of the other byproducts would be true. The first goal. The first goal, and again, these are not earth-shattering, okay? But the first goal was that we wanted to raise kids who loved and wanted to follow Jesus with all of their hearts. The second was we wanted them to love one another deeply, intimately, passionately, the way Jesus loved us. To love Jesus and to love one another. And I know that doesn't sound all that original, but it was the grid through which we ran all of our parenting. In the hourly, day by day, year after year, that is how we ran everything that we did in our house and our homes. It's what ruled our discipline, how we spoke to each other. It was how we determined what our calendars were going to look like, how we celebrated events and holidays, who we spent our time with, what our kids were allowed to do and not do, where they were allowed to go and with who they were allowed to go, how we dealt with rebellion and dating and disrespect. It all went, not perfectly, trust me, they will tell you, and you know, part of me says, we should have a thing, ask John's kids, and maybe we will, we'll see. But it all went through a filter with those two things in mind. How will these decisions, what I'm going to say, what I'm going to do, how will this impact their love of Jesus and their love of one another? If we do this, if we don't do this, how is it going to impact that? It was purposeful, it was intentional, it was focused, and here's why. Because in our reading and the seminars and the study and the evaluation of lots and lots of families and material, two things kept coming into my mind. I kept seeing these same things repeatedly. The first was, we met lots and lots, and I should get Connie and Ed up here with the two one time, but we met lots and lots of Christian parents who were raising their kids to be Christians. You ask them, what are you doing? What's your goal? My goal is I'm raising my kids to be Christians, which meant to believe a certain way and to act a certain way. Heck, in the 80s and the 90s, you even had to dress a certain way, if you remember. The parenting goal, which I know actually for their kids, was to become followers of Jesus. To their kids, it was never really about following Jesus. It became something quite different. It became about following rules. It became legalistic. It became performance-based and performance-oriented. It became very focused on prayers of salvation, behavioral modification. And again, these were wonderful, well-intentioned parents that loved God. But the end game was to raise Christians as defined by what they believed and how they behaved. That was the end game. You'll be able to tell my kids are Christians because they'll be able to recite something or pray a certain prayer and they'll look and behave a certain way. And so they'll be Christians. And what we noticed over time was that unfortunately, it seemed like a lot of those kids when they got older, two things seemed to happen. A lot of times when they got the opportunity, they bailed on the faith of their parents. It became the religion that they rejected, sometimes flagrantly, but oftentimes it was just that it wasn't nearly as important to them as it was to their parents. Wasn't a priority, and so they dropped it. They would probably say that they are Christians, but practically in their lives there wasn't a lot of fire for Jesus in their life. There wasn't a lot of passion for him. Their faith was kind of like a relic of their past. It was part of their childhood, but it didn't really have any daily impact on their lives. The second thing that we noticed was that in those environments, lots of kids not only rejected the faith of their parents, but their parents and their siblings. Again, sometimes flagrantly, but oftentimes the relationships in the family, they just weren't passionate relationships. When they got the chance to walk away or move away from mom and dad or their brothers and sisters, they did. I mean, they call now and then, they visit on the holidays, but you know, if you ask them if they love their family, they'd say, of course I love my family. But family isn't at the forefront of their mind. They would say it's important, but if you look, it's not with their time and their energy and their days. And days turn into weeks and weeks turn into months, with little or no contact, very separate lives. And so Joan and I wanted for our kids what you want for your kids. We wanted something very different. This is weird coming from the pastor, okay? Gotta keep an eye on time here. I didn't care if my kids were religious. If anything, I might have overdid it on this. I didn't want them to be the religious kids in school. We wanted them to know and love Jesus, to trust Jesus. I didn't care about their religiosity. I just wanted Jesus to be not a distant hope, but a present reality. And we wanted them to love one another so deeply and thoroughly. We wanted to be family, to be such a place of love and of grace and of acceptance and of joy and peace and fun, that if given their choice of hanging out with anyone, that they would choose to hang out with their brothers and sisters and hopefully their parents. You can ask Ryan, this will drive you nuts if you marry into this. It's funny, my kids have recently been getting taken out by family members. Somebody married into our family, married one of their cousins, and then another cousin literally made appointments with them to take them out and say, I don't understand, how did you guys turn out like this? One of them said, what did your parents do that you all love each other so much? Because now they have kids and are like, we're trying to figure this out. Now please hear this, my kids are human beings. Sometimes they are not each other's biggest fans. They have days, we have days, bad days, good days, like every family. But in all those days, there have just always been those two primary focuses, love and follow Jesus, love one another. Everything we did parent-wise went through that grid. And so parents and grandparents, people of influence in relationships, can I ask you, have you had that conversation? Either internally with yourself or with your spouse? Or are you parenting or grandparenting or leading with a purpose? Maybe you and your spouse are actually going in two different directions. You may never have thought about it. You may never have articulated it. But are you parenting or grandparenting or influencing in a direction towards a destination? It could be as simple as some underlying thought pattern, right? You're always going somewhere. Maybe you're going, I'll never be a dad or a mom like mine. That's a destination. It could be a desire for prestige or recognition or validation as parents by your children's accomplishments. And if by the way you're doing this, that would make you a human being. We all fall into that trap. Just most of the time we're not aware of it. But when you parent that way, it leads to destinations. You see, you are leading them somewhere. And I don't know one parent who has bad intentions when it comes to raising their children. Not one. I'm not aware of one parent who ever said, boy, I can't wait to screw this kid up. Every parent has good intentions. Nobody walked out of that hospital and said, boy, I can't wait to do a number on him. But I read a quote this week. It's so good. Direction, not intention, determines destination. Or as the scriptures say, without a vision, without a known destination, without knowing where you're going, without knowing the end game, the people lose restraint. They stop obeying. Think about this in the truth of raising kids. Without your children understand where the destination is, where they're going as a family, where we're going, without them understanding an overarching ideal, right? Their place in the history of their family and where their family is going, what the promised land is, they lose restraint. They stop listening. They check out. They rebel. But happy is the one who follows instruction. All comes down to that overarching vision for your family. They see the destination. They know where we're going. They know where we've been as a people, and they know where we're going. What's so interesting about this verse, it's very famous. Raise your hand if you've heard that verse, without a vision, the people perish. Raise your hand if you've heard that, please. Come on, more of you heard it than that. Do you know what the verse is right before? How's this for context? If you correct your children, they'll bring you peace and happiness. Without a vision, the people lose restraint, but happy is the one who follows instruction. Parents, correction without vision is a road to rejection. Correction without vision is a road to rejection. God knows this. God chooses over the scriptures to refer to himself as Father. Imagine that. God is showing us that that is a primary role. He is parent and he knows this truth. The scriptures reflect it over and over. God knows that parenting without established vision is a road to rejection. Why do I say it? Because it's based on the story of his children. You know the story of how God freed the nation of Israel from slavery in Egypt. Miracle after miracle, God miraculously and he mightily leads his people out and he sets them on a journey to the promised land. And yet, here's God's warning about what happens if you set the wrong vision, the wrong promised land, the wrong destination. He tells the people, when the Lord your God, this is through Moses, brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, to give you a land with large, flourishing cities you did not build, houses with all kinds of good things you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves you did not plant, then you will eat and be satisfied. You know what that's the destination of? Isn't that what we want for our children? That's happiness, right? That's how we would define happiness, just being fully satisfied. But he goes on, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt and out of the land of slavery. It's a language of warning. If your vision is merely for satisfaction, be careful, because there's a danger in that destination. How do we know? Well, it's the story of God's people over and over and over again. We need to know it as parents. We need to share the danger of the destination of happiness with our children. We'll get into that next week. But here's what the scriptures say. After that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, these are the people that were brought into the promised land, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. One generation. It made it one generation. After all of the miracles, after all of the leading into the promised land, when the goal of the children of God became happiness, satisfaction, right? Which, by the way, winds up becoming, you know, the desire of us and for our children. One generation later, they did not even know who God was or what he had done. And parents, the result, here's the result. Then the Israelites, parents, please hear this. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshiped various gods of the peoples around them. The children, one generation after getting the happiness, embraced the values and visions, the confusion and idols of their neighbors. God knows parenting without an established vision is a road to rejection. God knows and warns that parenting with the wrong vision of happiness and satisfaction in mind is a recipe for ruin. And so what is his prescription for the problem? It's one that Joan and I stumbled on. In hindsight, I think we were led to it by the grace of God. Next week, I'm going to share it with you. How we parented towards the destination of loving Jesus and loving one another. That was our destination. How did we get there? We got there through God's parenting plan for his people. It was a simple prayer. It's known as the Shema. It is the most ancient, most famous, and most holy prayer in the history of God's people. It is recited even to this day, every morning and every evening by the people of Israel. Here it is. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your strength. These commandments that I give you to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you wake up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your homes and on your gates. Did we say it like that? Can you imagine kids? Gather around, Shema time. No. Did we pray it like that? No, no. Did we do it every morning and every night? I wish I could say that we did, but we didn't. How did we use the Shema to get to the goal? Well, I will show you next week. But in the meantime, here's your homework. Here's some questions for reflection. First, what's your goal as parents for your children? Do you have one? Where is it? What is it that you're leading them to? Because understand, if you don't decide, if you don't set the direction, someone will. The culture or their circumstances or other kids or other parents. And finally, who is it that you are leading them to? Is the destination a place, a point, a passion, or a person? Next week, God's prayer and plan for parents and people of influence. But this week, spend some time. Figure out where it is that you've been leading and where it is you want to go. Because direction, not intention, determines destination. Let's stand and close the song.